All right, this is ESH Electric Sisterhood, and I'm Ninja Sista. Now, normally, if you are a frequent listener of the podcast, you notice that the intro has changed a little bit on this episode, because usually I say what episode number it is, and I introduce myself, and I introduce Pandalicious. And Pandalicious isn't on board for this recording, because we had a little snafu with the traveling. As you know, I went up north to visit Pandalicious and do a series of live shows from there, and doggone it if the damn airline didn't lose my luggage, which happened to contain the hard drive with this week's podcast already recorded on it. Of course, I didn't find this out until Sunday evening. They were supposedly going to have my bag back to me by Monday morning. Well, Monday morning has come, people, and still no hard drive. So I'm having to do an impromptu quick recording because I can't leave you in the lurch. I love you too much. So this episode is a ninja special. See, I snuck it in on you because I'd be ninja and shit. And this episode is my top 5 replay games. And by that I mean top 5 games that are in heavy rotation and will always be in heavy rotation in my stash. These are the games that when I'm waiting for other games to come in that I've rented, or waiting for games to come out so I can buy and devote time to them, these are the games that I go back to. These are my standards, people. These are the games that knock my socks off and get them whiter. So with that, let's begin. The first game that I want to talk about is Ninja Gaiden Black. It is an Xbox-only title, so for those of you who don't have an Xbox, for shame, you won't know what I'm talking about. You'll remember the old Ninja Gaiden, but you won't remember this one. So if you needed a reason to go out and buy a cheap Xbox, because I don't know if it's backwards compatible with the Xbox 360 yet. Hopefully I'll be picking up my Xbox 360 this week and be able to tell you. You really ought to play Ninja Gaiden Black. Now you might say, well, why Ninja Gaiden Black, not Ninja Gaiden? Well, Ninja Gaiden Black basically has all of the jump packs already built into the game that you could download or play through Xbox Live with the original version of the game. So that's why I suggest just going ahead and getting Ninja Gaiden Black, because then you don't have to worry about installing the updates if you got space or if you don't and all that stuff. You can just jump right in and play and whoop some serious ass. Now, one of the things that I really enjoy about this game and the reason why it's in my top 5 standards and probably is my number 1 standard game, if I'm at all honest, is because the gameplay is so tight. I mean, the fighting style is perfect. It's not superhuman. It looks like there are elements that could actually happen if you trained hard enough to make happen. The body type of the lead ninja, Ryu Hayabusa, who you may recognize if you played Dead or Alive at all. Yeah, same guy, done by the same development team, Team Ninja. But the gameplay is just solid. It has a great balance of incendiary and projectile weapons, as well as your standard weapons and your magical or magically equipped weapons, your strong weapons. For instance, you have one sword that you're able to acquire and then build up, which is called the Dabularo sword, which can really put some serious damage into fiends. Like crazy. And it comes in handy. All of the weapons, if you can max them all out, with the exception of maybe the shuriken, are worthwhile. In the beginning, the shurikens help because they help you keep people off of yourself. But really, as you start getting other incendiary devices, it's what you want to switch to. And only use the shuriken when you absolutely have to and you have no other weapons available to you to keep enemies off of you. Did I mention that the game is gorgeous? Because it is. The graphics in this game are just stunning. I mean, sometimes I would find myself getting killed by an enemy because I was paying too much attention to what was actually going on in the background than the foreground. Now, you know I have to talk about the camera. Because just about every game platform that has any kind of platforming elements to it, we always have to talk about the camera. And in this game, I think that the camera was a little bit better. in Ninja Gaiden than in Ninja Gaiden Black, because I found myself getting stuck in some corners that before I wasn't stuck in. But at the same time, it's still one of the better cameras that I've used, because at least it gives me a quick button so that I can center the camera behind me, which you will find will be your best friend throughout this game. If you believe nothing else that I tell you, people, center the camera like crazy. You will need to look around environments to see where it is that you need to go and how you can get up there and things like that. But as soon as you do that, put the camera behind you. You need to see what's coming at you. What's gonna try coming at you. Like quick. So do yourself a favor. Do a sister a favor. Center the camera. You'll thank me for it. You really will. But if you like a good fighting game, like if Nightshade made you happy and pissed at the same time, Ninja Gaiden Black is the redemption for that. Because that game could have been so awesome if only it was just a little bit better. But we'll get to Nightshade in another podcast, because it is truly another podcast. The next game up in my top 5 replay games is Tomb Raider Legend. Now, I know you've heard me talk about Tomb Raider Legend. It's mostly because it's my newest acquisition. But I have to put it this far up in the replay because I don't see a time where I'm not going to play this game. First of all, it looks stunning, especially on a 42-inch LCD TV with dual HDMI ports. Not that I'm bragging. Yeah, I am bragging. But the game actually is pretty good. Now, a lot of people complain that it's short, but I actually like the fact that you can knock this game out in a serious gaming session in about 5 hours, really. And I like that because it allows me to not have to worry about getting too serious or too invested. I can just come home from work, enjoy the good gameplay, knock the game out, and feel like I've accomplished something without having to get all of the items and all of the unlockables. But I can actually make progress and beat the boss, you know, and then go to bed and it not be too early in the morning. And then when I want to come back and go after those goals that I missed, I can. That's really nice. I think that a lot of developers and I think that a lot of reviewers miss the point on that, you know, sometimes it's good to have some games that are short. You know, not all of us can devote 80 hours to beating a game because it will take months for some of our schedules to get that kind of time together to do it. You know, some of us can really only devote 5 hours a week total to gaming, and that's excluding the weekend. I'm talking work week, people. I'm talking work week. So I like the fact that it's a short game. I like the fact that I can get through it fast if I want to, or take my time and really explore and try to get to work on combos and combat fighting and really use all of the things that Lara can do to my advantage. But if I just want to go through and be a badass and kill everything, I can. That's really nice to know. I also think that the plot is actually fairly decent as far as everything that we know about the Croft universe. You know, we've all known that, you know, Lara's dad died, or we think he's dead, and her mom is definitely dead, and that's part of her motivation for getting into archaeology and raiding of tombs, so to speak. So we all know that that's basically the background, but to shed a little more light is nice. Now, there are some people who have claimed that it's so stupid because, oh, we're on a plane and we, you know, crash in Nepal and, you know, the only people who survive are Lara and her mom, and then she pulls a stone out and then she dies, we think, but no, it's actually Avalon. Well, think of it like this. How many people would actually buy the game if it turns out that, you know, Lara's mom was a hooker and her pimp picked her back up and she got strung out on crack and, you know, was working down on Essex Street slinging rock? You know, would that be a good motivation for a child to get into archaeology? I don't think so. So the fact that the crash in Nepal and it has to do with Avalon, I think that that really fits for the Tomb Raider universe. I don't really see a problem with that. I don't see it as being a bad thing, really. I really don't. And since I've had to play so many really bad Tomb Raider games, the fact that there's finally a good one, at least one that you can play and have fun playing, I'm not gonna knock them just because the plot is a little far-fetched. I mean, if you want to talk about far-fetched plots, I mean, we can talk about Ka, we can talk about, let's see, pick any Rayman platforming game you want. I don't really think that this plot harms the game or the gameplay. But that's just me. Like I said, it's in the number two spot, which is really odd because I didn't expect for that to happen. I really thought that, you know, it would be one of those games that I would play for a little while and I would get tired of it and chuck it away, just like the previous Tomb Raider games that I've been burned on. But I think that this will definitely be one of those games that I constantly go back to and play while I'm waiting for other things to come in or come out. So that's Lara Croft Tomb Raider Legends. The next game is actually a GameCube game. I know, surprising, because you don't hear me talk about the GameCube often, which is true because I only have a couple of games that I actually really enjoy on the GameCube, but one of them has made it into the top five of replay games, and that is Animal Crossing. Now, if you live in a cave or under a rock, you probably never heard of Animal Crossing. Or if you are a console elitist, and your console of choice is not the Nintendo consoles, then you probably have never heard of Animal Crossing. But Animal Crossing, I kind of have a formula for it. The Sims, minus sex, minus careers, plus fishing, times miniature cute animals. If you put that all together, it equals Animal Crossing. Because that's basically what it is. It's like The Sims, but it's not a daily chore. Although it can be, because if you stay out of the town for too long, weeds start growing up in your little village, and you have to go and pluck them because it brings down the morale of the town. Which, when you don't have a whole lot of time to devote to your town, can be a big pain in the ass. Because those weeds sprout up every freaking where. Like, no joke. It is a pain in the booty booty. In the booty booty, people. In the booty booty. But what I like about the game is that you can get in and you can get into the, you know, doing errands for people and getting free stuff and earning money to buy furniture and designs for your apartment. And as you go along in the game, you can actually earn upgrades to your apartment. So you can earn a second floor and a basement each time one of those modifications is done to your house. Then you get a new mortgage. You got to pay it off. Got to make payments each, you know, you can make payments every day if you want to, or you can make payments each week until you pay it off. And then once you own it, you can do whatever the heck you want to the roof. You can paint it anytime. You can change and swap out whole decors and earn points to see who likes your house and who doesn't. The interesting thing, and one of the reasons why I keep coming back to this game when I have the time, is because there are new elements every single time you play the game. As time goes on and on, you get new characters who come into your town. Some stay for a long time. Some just stay for a little time, put up a house. If you don't pay any attention to them, they leave. There's always a new song to get from KK Slider, who only shows up one day a week at a specific time. And then if you listen to a song, you end up getting it, and you can keep it in your boombox at home so you can have different music playing when people come into your house. Different characters visit at different times of the month to sell different items. So there's always something new going on, no matter how long it's been since you've actually played the game. Somebody new is in your town. Somebody's getting ready to leave your town. Somebody's got a new item that you haven't seen before. And that's really neat. It gives you a reason to come back and play some more. And then, if you have somebody else who has the game, who has a town, you can actually take your memory card over to their place, pop it in the system, and then you can actually hop on the train and take a train ride over to their town and see what their town is like, see what their house is like, see what their indigenous fruit is, and if it's not the same as yours, you can bring some of that fruit back and plant it in your town and get money for it. I mean, who doesn't like shaking, basically, a money tree? I know I like shaking a money tree. I don't know about you people. Plus, it's a break from all of the violent games that I tend to play because I need to get stressed out. So it's one of my, you know, guilty pleasure coochie-wootie. I only whip it out now when I really need to. But when I first got the game, I played it so incessantly. The amount of money that I have right now without cheating is like $998 million. Dollars, which if you've ever played Animal Crossing, you know, is an insane amount of money to have in the bank. I mean, it got so bad that I had my niece and nephew come over to play the game and set up houses, and I would mail them, you know, letters of $30,000 each so that they could get their mortgages paid off, because I just had to get rid of money. I mean, at this point, I'll never spend all of it. There's just no way. And I just thought that that was so funny, because the looks on their faces like, oh my God, how could you play this game for that long? And I was like, you don't understand, you know, that's a lot of fishing at 3 a.m. to catch this one fish that just, you know, only comes out at 3 a.m., but the fish is worth like $40,000 if you catch it. So if you can catch like five of those, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty pathetic. I was pretty addicted. Not as addicted as Pandalicious is to WoW, but pretty addicted nonetheless. But I did eventually kick my habit once I felt accomplished and moved on. Which brings me to the fourth game in the list of standards, which is Soul Calibur 3. Now, Soul Calibur 3 is a relatively new game, but I've played this series since it was Soul Edge back on the PlayStation. That's why I said PlayStation, as in PlayStation 1, not PlayStation 2. Played Soul Edge, Soul Calibur, played Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast. Yeah, you heard me. Dreamcast. Played Soul Calibur 2 on all three consoles, because that's just the way I roll. And then bought Soul Calibur 3 when it came out on the PS2. Now, the reason that Soul Calibur 3 is in my replay top 5 list isn't just because it's a badass fighting game, because it's a badass fighting game. Don't get me wrong. But the reason why it's in my top 5 is because of the create your own character mode. I cannot tell you how much I enjoy this character mode. Because as you play through the game, you can unlock different styles that you can use to create characters for. And once you get them all unlocked, you can create a barbarian, a thief, a ninja. And each of these types has their own fighting style. So once you pick the type, once you pick the sex, you can then customize how they look, their skin tone, their hair type, their voice, their eye shape, what clothing that they have. And where this game's create your own character mode, I think, surpasses most of the other fighter games create your own character modes, is that the clothing is layerable. So if you have a skirt that, you know, opens on one side, if you put leggings underneath, you will be able to see the leggings on the one leg where the skirt is open. You'll be able to layer a vest on top of a shirt, or if your character has long hair that's hanging out in the back, if they just put a cap on the top, you'll see the hair flowing out from behind. And there's very little bad pixelation where things will float through other things. So it does look very natural. So you get a well-rounded character. You get a character who is a proper representation for you of what it is that you want as far as the look, the fighting style, and things like that. And then you get to show off your creativity to your friends, because you save all of these made characters on your memory card and then can take it over to a friend's house and play them. And if they've got a memory card with room, they can make their own playable characters and you can go back and forth. I, for instance, have 6 characters that I've made on my memory card. Team Whoopass, as they're known. Basically, by anyone who's ever played me on the SC3, you can ask Pandalicious. Team Whoopass ain't nothing to fuck with. It's really not. But they're all perfectly balanced for the way that I play the game. So they're all the types that I work best with as far as move lists and being able to remember. Because anyone who's played SC3 knows that the move list can get very, very complicated very, very quickly. So Team Whoopass consists of 3 male characters and 3 female characters. Each of those sets has one player that's a weapon master, which means they can use every weapon that's available and every style that's available. So as I choose to play with them, I can decide what style and weapon I want to use. Then each of those teams then has a ninja. And then one of the teams, the female team, has a dancer, while the other team has a saint. And there are a multitude of other choices. I think there's either 8 or like 10 different fighter styles that you can choose from, but you really have to find out what works for you. Some can use lances and long-range weapons. Some can only use short-range weapons or but are very quick. But there's so much variety that the game never gets old. It never gets stale. Whether you're playing against the computer or playing against another opponent, there's always something new. I guess that's why all of these games that I'm talking about in my top five are in my top five, because they don't get old. There's always some new avenue that I haven't explored yet. There's always some new element of gameplay that I haven't mastered yet. The game just refuses to get old for me, and that's why it's a standard. Which brings me to the last game in my top five. I think that it's a game that just anybody who needs just a little time to themselves to think can play. You've heard about me being addicted to this game at times. You've heard me mention the game a few times with a series, and it's Dynasty Warriors 4. And the only reason why it's not Dynasty Warriors 5 is because I haven't been able to get my hands on a copy of Dynasty Warriors 5 yet. As soon as I can, I will definitely be playing it. But Dynasty Warriors 4, or even Samurai Warriors, which is on my Xbox, both of those games never get old for me, because you can always pick a new arc to battle. You can always pick a different battle to start with, or a different way to wage the war or the battle. There are different items that you can equip, different horses that you can use. And so, you know, it's one of those choose-your-own-adventure type games, where I can decide to be a badass slow character, but that has a heavy, heavy weapon, so I do a lot of damage, so I have to wage war and pick my battles a little more carefully. Or I can be somebody that's very quick, that doesn't pack as much a wallop, but still packs one, so I can go through, and if I need to take out two armies at the same time, I can, because I can get around fast enough that I can get some health replenished very quickly and easily and jump back into the battle. I think the thing that I enjoy the most about the Dynasty Warriors and Samurai Warriors series is that they are based on actual historical events, so that when I'm sitting through the FMVs and they're telling me these stories and it's playing out with these characters, I feel like I'm actually learning a little something and then commencing to kick ass, which is very good. And when you're playing these games on a high definition big TV, makes a huge difference, because then you can actually see all the characters and the gameplay and stuff. The only thing I don't like about the game is that when you let too many battles or armies converge in one spot, you get so much slowed down. I'm hoping that that will actually not be the case on the next-gen consoles, because it really is the only thing that makes the game suck. But Samurai Warriors is definitely a game when I'm about to go to bed, but I've got an hour left before I really need to jump in the bed, it's most likely the game that I turn on. Just because I can get through a battle in about a half hour. Because there are some battles that say they take a half hour that really only take 15 minutes. So I can get enough into it that I can kick a little ass, have a little fun, and not be riled up before I go to bed, but feel like I accomplished something, got a little gaming in. Now, do I recommend that you buy all of these games if you don't have them? Hell yes. Because if you have these systems, you'll enjoy them. Well, maybe not Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing's not everybody's cup of tea. If you don't like The Sims, you're not going to like Animal Crossing. So do yourself a favor on that. But the rest of the games, if you like something that will cause any kind of competition, or you like a game that will just let you jump in, have some fun, and jump out. You want a game that's going to let you jump in that you think you're not going to like, but is going to challenge you so damn much that you have to keep on playing? There's not a game that I've mentioned that you shouldn't at least rent. If you have an Xbox and you don't own it, maybe even slap your mama. No, don't slap your mama. I don't want to encourage anybody, you know, committing matricide. That's just bad. But they're all good games. They're all games that if you invest in, you won't feel like your money went down the tubes. They're all games that if you own next year, you'll still be glad you own them. They're not going to be games that you're going to want to take into EB and try to get, you know, a $10 credit toward your next purchase on. I just don't see that happening. I mean, these are all games that I still have in my collection, and I don't keep anything in my collection unless I absolutely want it. And I know it's a game that I'm absolutely going to play more than once. If it's a game that I'm only going to play once, or I even think I'm only going to play once, I only rent it. If it changes my mind while I'm renting it, then I'll go out and buy it. But that happens very rarely, folks. And I don't see that changing anytime too soon, with companies having to devote more and more time and more money into developing single titles. I just don't think that we're going to see the wash of titles that we're used to. I don't think we're just going to see, you know, 8 different types of fighting games. I think you're going to see 4 major fighting games, and that's it. I think you're going to see the 4 major RPG games, the 4 major RTS games, and I think that things are going to go from there. So I think that you're going to have fewer games competing for your money, but they're going to cost more money, so you're going to have fewer games. It's quite a vicious circle. Not a vicious soir, which I believe is a cold soup. I could be incorrect. Email us and let us know if I'm incorrect. But that's my top 5 replay games. The games that I keep playing over and over again. If you don't like anything that's on the list, or if you just want to mention what your top 5 are, all you got to do is hit up our website, and you can comment on the post for this podcast, or if you'd like for this to maybe be a section on the website, hit us up. Use the Hit Us Up link at www.electricsisterhood.com and click on the Hit Us Up link. Fill out the form and say, hey, you know what? You should do a top 5 games that I love to play, or top 5 games I keep coming back to, or top 5 games that sunk monkey nuts. You know, I think that'd be really cool. That way we could comment on that stuff. Or send in our top 5 favorites. Yeah, I think that could be quite hot. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us at 1-888-333-8985 and leave us a voicemail message. And tell us, you know what? I don't think any of those games are good. Or you can just comment and say, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Or you can comment and say, you guys suck. We'll listen to it. We won't play the ones that say we suck, but we'll listen to it because we're good like that. So keep hitting us up on the website, because we love it when you do. Now you'll notice that I haven't mentioned a candy bitch in the podcast. That's because I'm going to wait. Because we named a candy bitch in the last podcast, which hasn't come back in yet. So I'm hoping that my bag will show up this week, and it will let me actually get that episode edited so that you guys can have a bonus week where you get 2 podcasts. And I'm not naming 2 winners. I'm just naming 1 winner. Now, you might say, well, what happens if the bag doesn't come in, Ninja Sister? Then what are you going to do? You're going to owe somebody candy. That's right. And I'm going to get it to them like a ninja. Stealthily. Because that's just the way I roll. So in the meantime, in between time, I'm Ninja Sister. And this podcast is toast. And I'm not putting anything on the toast this week. Because I have no Pandalicious. So I'm just going to have plain old, boring, white toast. Maybe I'll put a little butter on it. But that's really about it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm out.